Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome.
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 Oh, yeah.
Oh, January 2025. What a month you were.
What a month.
What a month for the world.
It was a bit of a sticky month for the world, wasn't it? Because it was all Donald stuff. The Donald.
It was cold and chilly outside, but we kept it lukewarm.
Oh, yeah.
With our banter, didn't we?
We did.
Yeah.
We didn't mention the Donald in any of our episodes, although I think in one of the episodes we did, and I took it out, and I'm going to put it all in this extra episode.
Okay.
Oh, is it going to go in? The Donald stuff?
So people are going to get some lukewarm, quite sort of stale.
Old, tepid satire.
Satire.
Really behind.
Behind the curve.
The avalanche of developments that have passed since then.
Room temperature takes. But I think he's de-oranging his hair slightly, like gradually. Is that? Have you noticed that?
No, that's you know this whole thing about normalization.
Yeah,
that comes up a lot. That's that.
My visual cortex
is no longer able to detect powerful orange. It just sees normal orange.
Oh, that's why I saw some Watsits the other day and thought that they weren't Watsits.
You thought they were in black and white.
I thought they were in black and white.
Little chipolatas.
That explains that. I think that Trump's hair transplant is from a different era of that technology. Because hair transplants are quite good now.
Right. Yeah.
Picture Wayne Rooney, for example. they have got better, I think, hair transplants. Mm-hmm. But his one is just from, I think it must be from like the 70s or something. I reckon it's just from like there was a particular scientist who was hot at the time.
He'd have been first in the queue.
Yeah. And he's had to stick with that technology ever since. Yeah. Which creates a kind of slightly sort of candy floss. Yeah. Is that sort of what's it flavoured candy floss.
But I thought that his whole vibe was like, he's not done the transplant. He's just got like the most high-tech comb over of all time. So it's all coming out of one sort of tiny bit of his hair.
One follicle.
Exactly.
Just working his absolute ass off. He's done a deal with that one follicle.
It's a cat of a million tails follicle.
Yeah. And he sort of manages to coiffure it into this big thing.
Well, if that ain't a lukewarm take, I don't know what it is. It's 2025 and we've just taken on Donald Trump's haircut.
Yeah, bad times. But not all bad. Now, of course, many people would say that a lot of what Donald Trump says is nothing more than hot air. And indeed, it is hot air that powers steam trains, although not really. It's more the actual steam itself.
Well, it's coal, isn't it?
Well, yes, it's coal.
You're doing a segue in. You're doing a segue sabotage.
You've smashed my segue's knees in.
Yeah, sorry, mate.
Get your own segue into trains. Or the railways.
I tell you what, here's a good one.
Yeah.
I'm afraid our segue for that bit of the show has been delayed.
But you can take this replacement bus segue.
Which will stop at all known topics.
All known topics. And I'm afraid the toilet isn't working. Sorry.
Yeah, so here's some extra bits from our chats about the railway.
Yes, please.
Worst thing you've ever seen on a train?
A couple banging.
No!
Yeah, that was unpleasant. That was really horrible. They're very, very smug about it as well. She was sat on his lap.
Right.
And it was quite late. I think this would have been like coming back from Bristol to Exeter, like that train. People will bang, people will do these things, but it was the smugness that irritated me.
You wanted them to be joylessly going away at it.
There were enough people on the train. Like, there weren't many people on the train, but there were enough people on the train that they knew, like, people know what's going on.
Right.
And that was gross.
Did they have tickets for the... Did they have to deal with a ticket inspection or anything during...
I didn't challenge them, sort of, revenue-wise.
No. Was it the quiet carriage?
It wasn't that sort of train, I don't think.
Wouldn't have made a difference with my lovemaking style because it's quiet as the tomb.
I just had a little thought, which is, cause this is going out after Christmas.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's being recorded before Christmas. Yep, I thought it might be a little maybe interesting, bit fun, bit different, to give the listeners a few little tips of things they could have done to have an ideal Christmas last year.
By the way, today is the 1st of January. It's New Year's Day.
When? For us?
No, if you're listening on the day of release.
Yeah, no, so I thought it'd be handy to have a few little tips. What are my top five tips for what you could or should have done last Christmas to have an ideal Christmas last Christmas?
Have you got five in your head already? Or have you got one or two and you're hoping the rest
will
come?
I've got one, mate. and it's not really a tip, it's just make some homemade brownies.
Christmas brownies. Okay.
Make some homemade brownies.
For that great Christmas when you present them to your family and they're like, ooh, lovely. Oh, lovely. Oh, the sort brownie. Of, oh.
The sort of things we have quite often.
I'm not really in the mood for that.
Particularly in the
brownie.
In the sort of noughties, they were really big, weren't they? No. But we still have them. Yeah, the kind of thing you have about three times a year, probably.
Henry, yeah, don't try and make out the brownies are old-fashioned. I won't have that.
Brownies had a moment in the noughties, and they're not. They're a bit. Put it this way: the cinnamon bun has very much ousted.
Oh,
the
maybe
brownie.
In London, but absolutely get to fuck with a cinnamon bun. Give me a brownie any day.
Yeah, so a cinnamon bun is a Nordic swirl of soft bread with a light cinnamon dusting. So
looks nicer than it is.
Yeah. But you just don't get it, do you, Ben? Because it's you like a big sort of
hog
wedge
bap.
Of a big crab,
hog bap.
You just like a big hog bap, don't you? No, just a little tip. My little tip. Maybe we could all do a little tip. But my little tip for Christmas.
And now we've both got to think of a tip. Great.
Sorry. My little tip is make homemade bread sauce. It's much easier than you think. Because you think about it, you think, how can you turn bread into a sauce? It's literally impossible. On like. Even a philosophical level, it's like, isn't it? It's like creating a perpetual motion machine, whatever. It can't be done. But it's actually quite easy. You shave a loaf of bread using, I use a Gillette razor. You can use a, you can use a Remington.
A hoile.
A hoile. Of course, the hoile.
A hoile.
Oh, that's a nice little tip, actually. That could be tip number two for Christmas presents this year. Why don't you give someone
The gift of Hual. For a smooth family.
For a smooth family. Hual is a head razor that I use to shave my head, the electric head shaver. So what you do is you get a loaf of bread, you let it go stale, so you leave it out for a few days. That's a hard bit. But then you grate it in a cheese grater, which is quite fun, into a pan full of milk. And then what you do is you let it imbue. This is a fun thing to do on Christmas Day or the day before. Which is you heat up the milk and you let it imbue. You can bet. So basically, you put an onion in there. You put cloves, a whole nutmeg.
No.
Yeah, you could put or like half a nutmeg, just some nutmeg. But you put anything Christmassy in it, and it infuses and it fills the house with this lovely Christmas sauce. You could put like an Elf DVD, for example, in it. A couple of smashed up baubles.
Effigy of Mariah Carey.
An effigy of Mariah Carey. book tokens, like or like a Waterstones gift card.
The Vicar of Dibley.
The Vicar of Dibley, DVD or The Vicar. Crackers, whatever. You shove it in and you heat it up on the stove and it just fills the house with a nice crispy smell. And then you mix in the breadcrumbs and it creates a lovely bread sauce. Easy to eat, even easier to make. No. easy to eat than to make.
Okay, so that's tip one of things you should have done over Christmas.
But make sure you sieve out those DVDs. It's all about having a sieve, but it needs to be a thick
colander would do it. Would it?
A colander, because you need because the bread sauce is quite gloopy. If you put it in a sieve, it'll just the fattiness of the milk and butter will create a kind of will congeal up against the.
The weft.
You end up with a sort of a bread sauce whey.
You'll end up with a bread sauce whey
coming out of the sieve,
yeah,
which is no good.
So you want a reasonably chunky colander to get it through.
Okay.
So that's really nice.
My tip for what you should have done pertains more to New Year's Eve, which for some of you was last night.
Mm.
And for some of you, it's still going. if you know what I mean.
I'm still celebrating the bloody Millennium Night. It was absolutely massive. And it's still bloody going. I'm off my absolute cheeks.
And my tip is that you want to guard against what's called hootenanny shock, which is you go from not watching Hootenanny all year round.
Ah, yes.
364. Mm. To watching Jules Holland's Hootenanny on New Year's Eve, and it can be quite a shock.
Yes.
So and often you'll think you've accidentally recorded it and you're watching it in reverse. That's not the case. He just walks backwards off the stage while facing forwards.
He does.
He's the only human being on earth that can do that. He can walk backwards while facing forwards.
It will also lurch you into sense memories from 1997. So whatever you were doing and, you know, whoever you were in love with at the time or, you know, whatever your passions were.
Especially if Jules starts interviewing Roland Riveron, that can really take you back.
Please don't start wondering what Jules with two O's is short for. Don't start wondering. It doesn't lead anywhere.
And it's Jules is not a pluralization.
It's not just a pluralization. You can study jewelology for years and still not understand why he's called Jules. It's not to do with killer Jules, is it? It's not to do with the electronic measurement either.
And he's not called Julian.
No.
He's definitely not called Bloody Julian.
And you're right, Henry. His ability to walk backwards out of shot while saying, Florence and the Machine, is
facing forwards,
yeah.
Well, you say it's his ability. It's actually the extraordinary talent of the studio audience who've been doing it for years, who have mastered the art of seamlessly and silently clearing out of his path.
Yes. That's right.
Yeah.
And like the Top Gear audience, they are all people who are serving community service orders, aren't they?
Yeah, once the show ends, they're back out picking up litter.
That's right.
In a tabard, yeah.
Don't start wondering why is it that Jules Holland always presents a New Year show when he was just a guy who was in a band called Squeeze who weren't that big.
Yep.
Don't ask that question either.
So my tip is you need to start introducing small amounts of Jules Holland into your sort of viewing diet between Christmas and New Year. So maybe start off with a couple of YouTube vids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Build up to a couple of episodes of later with Jules Holland before you get to the New Year's Eve. Otherwise, it can be a shock. So that's what I'd say.
And you can look at the footage of him of some of him in the various war crimes tribunals he's taken part in. Those are on YouTube, aren't they?
Also, I feel like I should explain to foreign listeners, in Britain, for some reason, we celebrate the beginning of a new year by all watching a TV programme where the former pianist from Squeeze introduces some quite often quite bad music.
Yeah. And he quite often he'll then get involved and duet with it using a kind of honky tonk style of music which no one on earth has ever liked.
But it's impressive.
It is impressive.
There's a degree of virtuosity.
That's really harsh on Jules Holland. Sorry, Jules Holland, but for example, you'll find there isn't a section of that in any CD shop. There isn't a section called honky tonk piano. Is there? And there isn't a radio station that does honky tonk piano. This is like,
I think to be fair, he'd call it boogie woogie. I think.
Okay.
Would he?
Also, somebody sent in a version of the Three Bean Salad theme tune in the style of Jules Holland.
Wow.
I mean, looking through the emails, it was sent in 2 years and 5 months ago. Shall I bet now?
Yeah, go on.
I bet now. So this is from Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
Excellent work.
Very impressive.
Mike, what's your tip that people should have done over the Christmas period but probably didn't?
It's televisual. I think people are, too many people are eschewing the monarch's speech.
I think it's because
you're getting too much king, too much queen in one go. So you've got to ease into it, right?
Okay.
Otherwise, people aren't thinking about the monarchy, and all of a sudden it's, oh my God, it's time for the King's Speech. Mm-hmm. We've got to sit down and watch the King's Speech. It's too much. People can't handle it. So you've got to eke it in. So what we do at Christmas, we make sure at Christmas lunch that there is a life-sized cardboard cutout of the monarch of the day who is served a full meal and served first. And for the weeks preceding, we play like King on the Shelf.
Yeah.
So there's lots of ways you can include it.
And you funnel food into the cardboard mouth hole, don't you?
Yes.
And Pam is sort of in a girdle suspended behind it, so the food isn't wasted.
Before Pam, we sort of ran a tombola and someone from the street would win the privilege of being the king's hintermouth. Yeah.
but now it's Pam.
Now it's Pam.
And Pam's tongue sticks out through Charles's mouth.
They have very similar tongues. So from the front, it looks like a kingly tongue.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So from the front, it looks like King Charles's tongue is slightly less long and rubbery than usual.
Obviously, the challenge, Mike, is stopping Pam from eating those, even though they're cardboard. The cardboard rendering of those sausage fingers to a dog on Christmas Day looks like.
Well, that's her Boxing Day treat. You see,
yeah, right. Yeah.
So you just got to introduce elements of the monarchy into the build up.
Talk me through the Brussels sprouts testicles. Is that...
Well, that's why there are testicles. That's why there are Brussels sprouts 3 on every plate.
That's right, yeah.
Because the king, he has an additional birthday. He also has an additional bollock. This is well known.
Well known.
Yeah. As decreed by God.
Exactly.
And then you can handle it. Then you can absorb the king's wisdom and the... commands and but people are otherwise missing, you know.
Can you hear that?
Yeah, that's the wind coming through my chimney.
That is mad.
Yeah, it's quite sinister, isn't it?
It's quite Dickensian.
It really is Dickensian. It's kind of like fairy tale, sort of like cottage in the woods kind of wind.
We're in the provinces.
Wow. Yeah. That's a scream. It's like,
the further west you go, the more the wind screams.
The wind does scream, doesn't
it? That's not London wind.
That's not London wind. London wind is, hello. Do you mind if I ruffle you? Too late already, huh? On your way, my good man. That's London wind. Whereas yours, because it's the screaming horror at change, isn't it? Isn't it? The wheeled horses, the belching wheeled horses are coming. Isn't it?
Yeah, and the agony of this of culture, what is... Well, we are born, we work, we die. It's simple, why change it?
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah.
We stick a clove into an orange once a year, that's enough for us.
And we eat our third born.
Right, well, hopefully some of you, you know... None of you would have done those things this Christmas because we didn't yet give you the advice. No. But next Christmas,
next time around,
and also as Ben was suggesting, just stick if you have the instinct, just stick a clove in something. Mm. It doesn't really matter what. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
just stick a clove in it.
Could be a sausage, could be a maiden aunt. It's up to you.
Doesn't matter. Just get the cloves in. And there are some places which are just these like. Monstrous, like Blade Runner hubs. I think, is it Three Bridges? It's like, it's not a place.
That's towards Crawley, isn't it? That's
just this kind of Blade Runner experience. Yeah, it's towards Crawley. Is that?
That's your Gatwick zone.
Is that London?
I think you're getting into Sussex once you're down Three Bridges way.
Okay.
We had a Ratmus email about Three Bridges.
Oh, yeah.
Shall I read it?
Go on then.
Dan writes, "Dear Beans, hope you're all well.
Hello, Dan.
I used to work for a company based on an industrial estate in Crawley. And each day I had to walk there and back again from Three Bridges Station. Mm-hmm. The route involved a footpath by the river, various back streets through an estate, and an underpass under a main road. Mm-hmm. Over the years, I saw atrocities, including, but not limited to, a live rat, a dead rat, a pair of discarded human underpants draped over a bollard, and a white vibrator abandoned under a hedge, which was character forming in the worst possible way." Dan from Worthing.
Oh, poor ruined Dan.
So that's the Three Bridges vibe, Henry.
God, yeah, that is. That's bleak, isn't it? What is the story which ends up with you taking your underpants off, leaving them on a bollard and not coming back for them?
Yeah.
Horrifying. What do you think of the romance of trains?
I buy into it.
Do you? Yeah.
I buy into it. I would be up for doing some mega, mega, mega rail journeys.
Yeah.
Mm. I've done some overnighters.
Mm.
But I had your sort of Orient Express dining car experience... My sister did one through America.
On the Orient Express?
That's it.
Yeah. That's incredibly hard to organise, isn't it?
It's terribly lost.
The Orient Express is one of those things that in my mind is somewhere between real and not real. Mm. It sort of is real, right?
Mm. It exists, yeah.
But could you end up just on it, not knowing, just buying a ticket on the train line and just happens to be the best train to get you from A to B until you're on the Orient Express.
You would notice because your train ticket would suddenly be £8,000.
Okay, yeah.
So that's why.
Yeah. And it would have a dress code on it.
Yeah. You'd have to be dressed as a flapper girl. That's
You'd have to be dressed as a flapper girl.
Yeah. It's monumentally expensive, the Orient Express.
We've got a choice, isn't it? You can either be Flapper Girl or Mysterious Count.
Yes.
with an incredibly valuable diamond hidden in one of his moustaches.
Yeah, you've got too many limbs to do the count thing, so you would, as part of your ticket, have to have one limb severed.
Yeah, that's right.
And replaced with a bejeweled hook.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And that limb can also then be paninied for you. Mm-hmm. Go on it.
To offset the costs.
To offset the costs a bit.
Because I tell you, the buffet car, they're running up a monopoly there and it's ruddy expensive.
They really bloody are.
Do you know what I like? What I find romantic is, and you still get these, I went on one of them last year in the Czech Republic. Trains where there's little compartments and there's six seats looking at you.
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
But is that romantic or is that I'm sitting opposite a guffing boar?
Well, because I did it in Germany as well, and it was me and five men watching the last day of the Football League on an iPhone.
It's so romantic, isn't it? You're right.
Whilst like chain drinking Stellas, basically.
Oh, that's quite cool. Yeah.
And it started off as fun.
Yeah.
And then it was just guff-pocalypse, basically, thing. It was quite grim. Yeah.
Once that's breached.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think what's quite romantic in my mind is that train where it's one really narrow corridor down one side and then the compartments off it.
Yeah.
And what's happening is it's always the chief of police is coming up checking each door on the way up.
Yes.
Isn't it? Because it's always...
Well, because there's always a dead body in one.
There's always a dead body in one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, that is quite romantic, isn't it?
Sometimes when Henry launches into one of his longer anecdotes, there's a stage kind of about two-thirds of the way in where physically I'm still here. Mm-hmm. But mentally, I've kind of ascended to a different world. I call it Neverland. It's a place where I never grow up. I commune with other flying children, and we battle a hooked pirate. Mm. And it's uncanny, actually, because that's very similar to the topic we talked about a few weeks ago, which was Peter Pan.
Isn't it just?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Golly gosh, what a coincidence. You can run, but you can't hide from Henry's anecdotes. You also can't fly. Unlike Peter Pan, which is the topic with some extra bits we've got.
Here we go.
Of now. Thanks.
There's also the film Hook, which features Robin Williams as Peter Pan, but as he's an adult, I think.
Oh, yes. Yes, because the twist is that he was Peter Pan, and then he came back, and he grew up, and he forgot about his past, and he goes back.
Exactly. I've never seen it. I saw 5 minutes of it this Christmas. It was on TV.
Really? I remember enjoying it as a kid. And Hoffman as Hook, right?
Hoffman as Hook, yeah.
I'm guessing, because I don't think I've actually ever seen Hook, but I'm guessing that Steve... Ovette plays a crocodile. I'm just trying to imagine the time. This is what, mid-90s, is it?
Early 90s, I think.
Von Segal.
Steven Segal.
Is it a shit-kicking crocodile?
That's a shit-kicking crocodile. Robin Williams, is he playing an adult who's actually lost touch with his inner child because he's so into business?
That's exactly it. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So many 90s movies, especially kids' movies, start in a boardroom or like in a sort of Manhattan skyscraper.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because he's too obsessed with business. And guess what? Does he turn up to his kids' shit play? No. Because he's too obsessed with business. So he doesn't
go. He might turn up, but his beeper might go off and he has to make a choice about whether he answers his beeper because his beeper beeps for business.
Because of business. And the kid's always on stage. It's often it'll be Waiting for Godot or something.
Mm. Yeah, your classic Christmas
classic
time.
Kids' fair.
Kids play only two children from 1,000 students on campus.
There's so much makeup on them. Everyone's inherent makeup.
Everyone else's parents are there. See, 2 9-year-olds.
It's the most over-teched production of Waiting for Godot you've ever seen. There's lighting changes every 4 seconds just so that everyone, all the other kids, have
get involved.
Yeah, but often they'll see their dad. Or they'll come to the line they're going to say, and they'll look out into the audience and see the dad isn't there, or the dad's leaving, or the dad has sent their butler, who's dressed up as their dad.
Yes.
But the way I look at it is, surely someone needs to be bloody doing some business. I mean, how's the economy going to run?
Who's keeping this going?
Who's keeping this going? And it's probably quite a bad play, I'm guessing. Do you know what I mean? That's like not a good production.
Where do you think your Christmas presents are coming from, right? Can't deal with it all. You expect something from your parents.
No, but I do think this unearths something which I find quite interesting, which is a thread in like Hollywood movies, which is that there's this, or at least in a maybe just in American culture more broadly. Hi, welcome to Three Bean Salad.
Taking the temperature of America.
In the early 90s.
Putting a poorly constructed homemade thermometer deep
into the anus
of America.
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 America. I'd like two tickets for the Chattanooga Choo Choo.
America. America.
Get me the DA.
A slice of old mama's apple pie down the Alamo in New York City.
Stop talking crazy. No one's ever going to want to drive around in these ridiculous cars you've been designing, Mr. Buick.
Burgers.
But quickly, on topic of, I had to take my own temperature recently.
Mm-hmm. Culturally.
Yeah. And turns out I'm simmering away nicely. I got a Russian novel on the boil. It said on the instructions, you can use this orally or anally, but we do recommend anally. Which I thought was a bit weird.
Sounds like a line, doesn't it?
It does.
But why give an option if you want to do anally, just say use this anally.
And also, don't offer me orally. Don't put orally in the mix because I'm going to choose orally.
Did you choose orally?
I did. Well, you know what? I thought better be safe. I did anally then orally. Because you can't be too safe. And then, of course, just my luck, a couple of days later, my temperature had gone, but I was suffering from... What would you get from that?
Circular dysentery.
I was suffering from circular dysentery, which is dysentery in a perfect circle, which is the worst way to get it, isn't it? I could not find a corner on my dysentery for love nor money.
No.
Basically, I feel like America has two different and sort of equal and opposite sort of value systems.
Yeah.
One is, obviously in America, it's all about you've got to be the president of the United States, isn't it?
On everyone, Wall Street.
The president, or on Wall Street.
Mm, both.
We've got to be, you know, anyone can be the best. You can make the most money, business, you know, you can innovate, you can be the best. You can be the richest and the most powerful and all that stuff. Mm. And that is a core sort of value, I think, in America. And yet the films then weirdly sell this opposite thing, which is, you got to go to your kids' shit play. You've got to go.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a good production. Your kid's doesn't actually even want to be work in the theatre long term. It's a nothing event. This is completely, it's not important. But you've got to go to that. What I'm saying, no, okay. I'm just going to reverse a little bit there. Obviously, it is important to go to your kids' play.
Yeah, you were coming across quite sociopathically, I think.
It was a bit early in the year, wasn't it? Oh, no, obviously, you've got to go. Obviously, it's lovely. You've got to be nice and supportive to your family. But then the film set up this kind of tension between, oh, he's a big business guy, but really it's more important to go to the play. But actually, that's not what, as a society, you're not. You're telling people that you've got to go and work loads. You've got to work the hardest. Everyone who works in America, you know, they work the longest hours. It's this culture which is obsessed with being the best, working incredibly hard. There's no embarrassment around money. Like, it's good to earn, to try and be rich and thrive. That, all the values are saying, do that, do that, do that. And then the films are going, yeah, but what about your little, what about your family and your play and stuff? Hmm. It's the conscience of the society is expressed in those films. The society feels guilty because it knows that fundamentally it values going to the big business meeting and all that stuff over. That will happen, and that's more important. That will happen at the cost of family relations and nice things like that. So the films kind of express that guilt that people feel.
And yeah, okay.
They like, so
So what do British films tell us about Britain? Most British films is Jim Broadbent opening a cafe.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. So what does that tell us?
I think is it celebration of mediocrity?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, sometimes you watch a film or look at a glossy magazine and you feel a bit jealous and a bit lame, right? If you watch a foreign film. Like even, yeah, that American movie, right? You've got the businessman. So no one in Britain is that successful, obviously.
Right.
It can't happen. And even if they make the decision to return to domestic life, then their domestic life is always in those films extraordinary. They have an incredibly beautiful house in a very beautiful, leafy New England location. It doesn't seem to be any concerns about...
With a sweeping staircase that comes down. Even if they're just a cop, they'll go home and they'll have a sweeping staircase.
There's no concern about how we're going to maintain the sweeping staircase if I give up my job. That's just, it's going to be fine for some reason. It's never clear why. So there's not much of a dilemma.
Yeah.
Really. And maybe, I don't know, maybe the real message is like, actually what you need to do is keep going. Don't turn up to your child's play. Brutalize the children in this way so that they are even more ruthless on Wall Street and even more successful.
Yes. And the staircase can be even more sweeping that they have.
Even more sweeping.
It could actually be like a Moebius staircase which sweeps infinitely into itself. Which means your beautiful, incredibly large-haired blonde wife is constantly sweeping down the staircase forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. You are looking up at her, enraptured, but also separate forever because you cannot enter the Moebius staircase.
Exactly, and that's what it's teaching on a societal level.
Yes.
Whereas the British film industry is trying to keep... It's about the family. It's trying to keep the family together because you're faced with a choice. You start watching the Jim Broadbent movie. He's opening a cafe. You knew that because you've seen all of the other ones. It's fantastically dull. In the next screen, there's a Mike Lee film. Oh, my God. You don't need to see them. They're all dreadful, right? But it's telling you, go home. You thought you wanted a night off your family. No, this is worse. Ours is worse. So go back, go and see your kids play, and the family stays together. Yeah. Thanks to Mike Lee and Jim Broadbent.
I think the British reality, though, is closer to you'll go and see your kids play. It'll be okay. Mm. But it's nice that you went. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally... You know, your relationship with your child is going to be more complex than just being filled by the plaster essentially of going to their play. I mean, what are you like the rest of the time? Do you know what I mean? Are you actually engaging with them?
Hmm.
The point I was going to make was, isn't the reality that if you go to your kids' play too often, you're not going to be promoted at work.
Mm-hmm.
You'll miss out on the big contract.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Mr. Fugayasha here. Mr. Fugayasha is visiting from Fugayasha Industries Tech.
Yeah.
Not Tech Industries, Ben. Industries Tech. It's a different Mr. Fugayasha.
So like, an umbrella company. And
you would have been on top of that if you hadn't been running lines with your kid for his bloody production of McHamlet. Doing a combo. Because they're both on the syllabus. You would have known that Fugayasha Tech Industries is a different company from Fugayasha Industries Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And you've prepared the wrong PowerPoint. Mm. You don't get the promotion. Oh, sorry, we can't get a sweeping staircase anymore. We've just got a hole in the ceiling.
And contrary to your movie expectations, you can't invite Mr. Fugayasha to come and see your child's play and that will radically change his view of the contracts, and he's not going to turn the hospital into a car park after
all.
If you think about it, you very rarely see a sweeping staircase in a British film.
Mm.
It's just a pokey staircase someone who gets thrown down, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it's royalty, isn't it? That's the only time, they're the only people with access to sweeping staircases, I think. They're the royals.
Or the Downton types.
Yeah.
What else? So Jim Broadbent starts a cafe.
Yeah.
In this film.
Yes,
and the message, and so, but does he go to his kids' play? Does a bit of both. He does a bit of both, and the cafe does okay, and the kid does okay, and everything's kind of okay.
Everything's okay. Maybe he embarks on a sort of an autumnal romance as well.
Okay,
with Penelope Wilton.
Yeah,
with both of them in the autumn of their years.
Nothing, and, nothing too
and
physical.
And both of them only eating and drinking autumnal snacks and drinks. So pumpkin, everything's pumpkin. Pumpkin soups, isn't it? And just root vegetables, so Swedes. Isn't it? It's a little signifier that it's about autumn.
And it's called, the film's called something like The Northumberland Parsnip Club.
And it's fucking massive in the Philippines. For some reason. It's just the amount of money they make in the Philippines from that film is crazy.
Jim has emailed, I think this is in reference to something we talked about in our Patreon episode. We were talking about watching Gladiator 2.
Yeah.
And about how there are some anachronisms in it. So
Tim McInerney reading a newspaper.
There's a bloke reading a newspaper, and there's like secret door mechanisms that go...
That's right. Also, of course, the whole thing is filmed. Which would not have been possible at the time.
And there's a score. Where's the orchestra?
A lot of those woodwind instruments actually were perfected during the
Late Victorian period.
Also, Ridley Scott was telling everyone what to do, which we don't think happened at the time. Yeah, there's a lot of problems with it.
So Jim says, I watched the film with my mum, who had gleaned from the internet in advance that there were historical inaccuracies in the film and was clearly looking out for them throughout, eagle-eyed.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Which led to her exclaiming within the first 5 minutes, would they have had pigs then?
It's a strong start.
In the 1970s, isn't it, with the first pigs? They are much more recent than people realise. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the same, isn't it, with people don't realise that death by flogging was still... Well, that was still going on, wasn't it, until the
mid-80s? Well, that landed on an asteroid, didn't it?
Just like the idea that she was on a total hair trigger to look for inaccuracies and was just seeing them wherever she could.
For pigs, yeah.
Well, that's that thing of just nestling into something going, I can't wait to bloody complain about this.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a good British streak.
Now, we've had a couple of emails about hippos. Mm-hmm. We talked, of course, about hippos.
Well, we did a Yuletide hippo episode, didn't we?
We did. Yeah. And I talked about going to Longleat to see the hippos on the boat trip and also the depressed gorilla who lived on the island.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of emails telling us what this email is telling us. This is from Paul. Now, Paul is the man who took me out on a hot air balloon. Sorry, this is getting quite confusing. Yeah. Just wanted to update you on the current hippo situation at Longleat.
Okay.
We were there with a balloon this year for the balloon festival.
Lovely.
He's not shy of mentioning his balloon, is he?
I mean, to be fair, I think if I had a hot air balloon, I'd talk of little else.
Also, it's a bit confusing, is it? Because it means that how you got to the place is always the best bit of any anecdote you tell. It's basically how you got there and how you got back.
We were there for the balloon festival, and during the briefing beforehand, we were informed that we had to maintain at least 500 feet above the hippo lake. Brackets for obvious reasons.
Because they can leap.
Because they can
150 feet.
They can leap. And also they can work as teams. They can triangulate. They can pyramidify, can't they? Okay. Yeah.
However, it was then pointed out to the organisers of the balloon festival by the Longleat staff that the hippos had, in fact, all now died.
Oh, no.
And sadly, no more. Also, the depressed gorilla is also dead.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, sorry, this is horrible news. Well, or is it just through the inevitable passing of time?
Are they not restocking them? Is it like a fire sale zoo? What's happening?
Well, I think we live in an era now where getting a hippo from Africa and bringing it to Britain is seen as a bad idea. Mm. So I think a lot of things you see in a zoo will be the last one you'll see in a British zoo, right? Because they're not.
Okay.
They were put there during a period where our ethical sense of zoos was a bit different, I think. So unless you're breeding the hippos, I don't think you're going to get a new hippo.
So they're sort of like old people's homes. They're like care homes now, zoos. Mm. They're just the twilight.
Twilight gulags.
The hippos have died, unfortunately. But we've had another email about hippo encounters. We've in fact had two. This is from Rebecca. Mm-hmm. After listening to a recent episode on hippos, I felt compelled to contact you regarding three points of order. One, hippos are not gross.
Interesting. Okay.
Really interesting. I'm just going to Google that. Yeah. Let's just find out. I'm going to ask ChatGPT or GBT or whatever it's called. Are hippos gross? Question mark. Whether hippos are considered gross depends on perspective. I mean, how close you are to it. If it's miles away, less gross. If it's right up in your face. No, but they do exhibit some behaviour and traits which might be perceived that way by humans. Here's a closer look. Why hippos might be seen as gross. One, defecation behaviour. To me, if you've got a defecation behaviour, it's already gross.
Yeah, that sounds like something that needs to be corrected.
Yeah, exactly. Hippos are known for, inverted commas, muck spreading, where they spin their tails while defecating to spread their dung.
Literally the shit hitting the fan.
In a sort of less fire hazard version of a, what's it,
a Catherine wheel.
Of a Catherine wheel.
A fecal Catherine
wheel. This behaviour marks territory and communicates with other hippos, but it can seem messy. Or unpleasant to us.
It's marking territory, but also devaluing it horribly at the same time.
Yes, it's sort of saying you wouldn't want to move here.
Actually. Yeah, it's covered in shit. Yeah. I'm really sorry. Okay, but do we get any counter-argument offered as to why she thinks they're not gross?
She has offered something of an argument, yeah.
Okay.
Just a few other points on this quickly. So two, constant immersion in water. Hippos spend much of their time in water that can be muddy and full of waste, including their own. This can give the impression of being unhygienic. I mean, that's basically Ben's, that's Ben's hygiene system, isn't it? You sit in a bath of hot water in the evening, you do your evening defecation.
You soap in it until the morning.
Number three, sweat or blood sweat. Hippos secrete a reddish, oily substance that acts as a natural sunscreen. We talked about this, an antibacterial layer. While fascinating and functional, it may look unusual or unclean. Four, diet and drool. They chew constantly, often leaving bits of plant material and drool hanging from their mouths, which some might find unsightly.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm very much in the camp of thinking they're a bit gross.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca says, hippos are not gross. They are awesome and cool.
Ah, but are those two things mutually exclusive?
Yeah, can you not be gross and awesome and
yeah,
cool?
Yeah, I would argue there's room for everything.
Yeah. Ooh, I mean, it's not really a strong argument, is it? It's a point of view, though.
Yeah.
But we appreciate it. Thank you, Rebecca.
Two, Henry did well to avoid seeing any hippos on safari, as we saw absolutely shitloads when we went to Kenya in 2019.
Oh. Okay.
Three, it is possible to have a hippo encounter and live to tell the tale.
Oh, that's good. Good to know.
My partner David and I are proof of that. When we were on our safari, we stayed at a campsite in the Masai Mara, which was full of hippos. The campsite had no electric fences and was guarded only by Masai guards at night, which was a bit unnerving. Brackets, we were told under no circumstances to leave our tents during the night. Our tent was at least on a raised wooden platform, so any wildlife visitors would need to be able to climb the stairs to get in. Anyway, in the early hours of the morning, we were both woken by a strange noise outside the tent, which sounded a bit like footsteps on gravel. We went to the door to check, and through the darkness, we could see a huge shape at the base of our tent platform, munching its way through the grass. It was, of course, a hippo. David wanted to take a photo, but I was too scared of startling it. So we zipped up the tent and went back to bed, listening to it eat its way around the tent, shaking the platform as it passed, and go on its way. It was extremely cool and a bit scary, but we definitely lived to tell the tale. I'm not sure anyone ever believes us, though. Rebecca.
Yes, that's the first recorded account
of someone who lived.
Survivor's account.
Is it possible that actually what happened that night was that the hippo did go into their tent, did what a hippo will do, which is, well, just mash them up from the feet up, very, very slowly from the feet up, isn't it? Just mash you with the, pound you to smithereens with their huge, with their huge feet, eat them, and then assumed her identity.
It's highly possible.
Could be, couldn't it?
And this email was written by a hippo.
Final email from Kim.
Kim, hello.
Hi, boys. I know I'm not the first listener to write in to let you know that your lukewarm banter has induced genuine physical illness. But in this case, I don't even have the excuse of being hungover or pregnant. As I sat down this morning to eat my breakfast, I thought I'd give your Ratmus episode a listen. What a mistake that was. Arguably, the title should have warned me, but I'm not usually squeamish, so I thought a little bit of daft chat and a few rodent anecdotes would be fine.
Yeah, it's not breakfast material, is it, really?
Then,
yeah.
Ben related the story of a rat eating the contents of a male's prophylactic.
Oh, that was really horrid.
As I said, I have a strong stomach, but I don't think I've ever vomited in response to anything before.
Oh, wow.
Right. How nice to have found the boundaries of my tolerance. Yours, Queasley, Kim.
Oh, dear. Yeah, lovely. That's quite good, isn't it?
That's a visceral reaction, isn't it? It's better to have a reaction than no reaction, isn't it? It's better to have someone puke when you tell a story than just sort of nod
It's the
off.
Same muscle group, yeah. isn't it, as Thanks, laughter?
Kim. It's the same muscle group.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same spasm centres.
That's great. Well, Kim has learned something about Kim, which I like. Mm. Thank you.
We think Ratmus will become as core a part of Christmas as Yule log and sprouts and stuff, don't we?
I think, from the correspondence I've seen, while a lot of people enjoyed Ratmus, a good minority had a bad time with Ratmus.
But it's the same with Christmas, isn't it? Not everyone loves
That's
it.
That's true.
Some people have a strong reaction.
But you just got to get through it.
You just got to get through it. Got to listen to an hour of really, really horrible rat stories. You just have to.
And now you're never going to get back.